We're going to have some fun coming up in a few minutes on Air Talk. How are you going to be celebrating Halloween? A drive-through haunted house? Are you going to go out and trick-or-treat in attempt to take precautions, keep yourself and family members safe? We'll talk about that coming up a little bit later this hour. But first, we turn our attention to the presidential race, where both President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden are campaigning in that critical state of Florida today. One of the central parts of Joe Biden's candidacy has been a public option that would be included or run alongside with the Affordable Care Act, which, of course, is the subject of a U.S. Supreme Court oral argument that will occur just a few days after Election Day. We're going to be talking about what that public option would mean, what advantages it might have for accessibility for those who fall between Medicaid, or what we call Medi-Cal here in California, for lower income residents, and the Affordable Care Act exchanges that take place in multiple states. Joining us is research fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University, Lonnie Chen, a frequent guest with us on Air Talk. He co-authored the recent Wall Street Journal op-ed, "Biden's Public Option Would Mean Massive Tax Hikes." Lonnie was an advisor for Marco Rubio's 2016 presidential campaign and was policy director of the Romney 2012 campaign. Lonnie Chen, good to have you with us again on Air Talk. Appreciate it very much. Let's talk first of all about how the public option might work. I mean, are there multiple ways that it could be related to the Affordable Care Act?
There are, and it's good to be back on the show again. And I think the design of the public option would make a big difference in terms of what the impacts will be on taxpayers, what the impacts will be for those who currently have coverage through their employers, through the Affordable Care Act. The devil is in the details. There's no question about it. One basic question, and we can talk about more, but one basic question is, who would be eligible for the public option? Would it be merely people who are uninsured now? Would it be people who work for small businesses? Would it be people even who work for larger companies? That design of the public option is really one of the predominating factors in looking at what the impact of it would be.
And would there be any way to keep the subsidies similar to the subsidies that are available through the Affordable Care Act for Americans who buy through the exchanges? Or would it require higher subsidies for a public option?
Well, I think if you're talking about the current subsidy structure, the Affordable Care Act, for example, would give larger subsidies to people who make less money. It's a progressive subsidy in that way. One would imagine a public option, if it were going to be made available to people in the same income categories, would structure in much the same way. The challenge, of course, becomes if you open the public option more broadly, you're talking about more subsidies potentially, and then it becomes progressively more expensive. So depending on who gets access and how generous those subsidies are, that certainly impacts things. In the broader picture, the issue with the public option is that there is going to be ever-increasing pressure to subsidize more and more of the premium expense that individuals pay. That's sort of a natural political dynamic we've seen, whether it's the Medicare program, whether it's other public programs. That really is the dynamic that, from a policy perspective, we'd need to get a hold of and a handle of in the coming years.
So your argument, to oversimplify, is that with that kind of pressure, that you would likely see the public funding of the public option increase over time, which would require significant tax increases.
Right. Yeah, there are two issues at play. One is the subsidy of the premium. And by the way, we've seen this in action. If you look at the Medicare program, when Part B of Medicare, which is a supplemental medical insurance part of Medicare, what pays essentially for your doctor visits in Medicare, when that program first started, the idea was to split premium costs between individuals and the government. And over time, that share has skewed disproportionately in favor of government to keep those premiums low. The other issue really is about providers and how much you pay providers. And the assumption is over time, you would pay providers more and more. And so their reimbursements through the public option would look more like what they are through private insurance now, which is substantially higher than what they get paid through Medicare or through Medicaid or Medi-Cal, as we call it in California.
All right. We're talking with Hoover Institution at Stanford Research Fellow Lonnie Chen, also with us a frequent Air Talk guest, Dr. Kavita Patel of the Brookings Institution. She's also a primary care physician. She's non-resident senior fellow at Brookings. She served in the Obama administration as director of policy for the Office of Intergovernmental Affairs and Public Engagement. Dr. Patel, good to have you back with us.
Thanks for having me again.
Your thoughts about whether a public option like this would necessarily require higher and higher government subsidies and tax increases to fund it?
So I think, of course, the much longer answer, as Lonnie alluded to, is that it depends. But I would say that having both worked with members of Vice President Biden's team as well as kind of watching this debate over the public option play out candidly over decades, I would say no, you should not make an assumption that this automatically requires higher taxation and higher spending from the American public. And I say that for a couple of reasons. Number one, remember that Vice President Biden has also been pretty clear that he wants any public option to involve some level of price negotiation with providers. And that does kind of reference what Lonnie mentioned, that, you know, everything in terms of cost drivers today in healthcare are really pegged to how much we pay for hospitals, pharmaceuticals, providers, with hospitals and providers being a very large proportion, Larry, of what we spend on healthcare. Rightfully so. Nobody's arguing that we shouldn't spend money on healthcare. It's just spending it wisely. So the public option would be administered by CMS, by kind of the government, but in order to actually leverage like the power of the government and sit alongside as an option. I think the key here is that it's an option. The availability would likely be to everybody. I think Lonnie also kind of pointed out, like, you know, is this just for a certain segment? I think it would be available to everyone. But Larry, the caveat with that would be that Vice President Biden's already talked about lowering or supporting an option to potentially lower the Medicare enrollment age. And then there's already been a very clear path for states to expand Medicaid coverage, particularly those states like my home state of Texas, which has not expanded Medicaid coverage. And so the idea is that you get to universal coverage, but not through, I think people are mistaking a public option, Larry, with kind of, quote, single-payer financing. And those are very different and distinct programs.
One of the things I was wondering about are the reimbursements that Lonnie Chen was mentioning, because Medi-Cal or Medicaid in the rest of the country, the reimbursement levels are typically less than what private insurers pay. So there's a subsidizing effect there. And if you have a public option, where would you expect those reimbursements to providers to fall? And could, if they don't match what private insurers are paying, would it be difficult to find doctors who would be willing to accept patients who were covered in the government plan?
Yeah, that's a great question. As a provider who receives those types of payments, I can understand the sensitivity. Let me level set for listeners. Certainly, private health insurance pays more for doctor services, et cetera, than Medicare does. Medicare pays more than Medicaid or Medi-Cal does. And if you talk to any health system executive, they'll tell you that it is just rough generalizations, Larry, that Medicare gives you kind of a neutral. You don't make money on Medicare, you don't lose money on Medicare. You make money on what private health insurance pays you, and you lose money on Medicaid. The public option that Vice President Biden's been talking about kind of builds on actually what had been supported by the House of Representatives back in 2009 with the Affordable Care Act and some earlier versions, and it would leverage really Medicare pricing. So we're talking about kind of pegging this to Medicare. And then if you want to go across the country to another state where they're trying to do something, Maryland is a decent place to just start to look at. It's not meant to be something the entire country would do, Larry, but in Maryland, they basically take all payers, private health insurance, Medicaid, and Medicare, kind of roll it all into kind of one reimbursement for hospitals and one fixed price that they are very public about. And it's actually, for that state, it's working well. So you could look to a public option to offer you something like that that keeps providers whole but gives the public something more affordable than what exists today.
We're talking with primary care physician Dr. Kavita Patel, who's also with the Brookings Institution as non-resident senior fellow. Lonnie Chen of Stanford's Hoover Institution with us as well. If you have questions about the centerpiece of Joe Biden's health care proposal, which is a public option that would sit alongside the Affordable Care Act and Medicare and Medicaid, we're at 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Lonnie Chen, how would you see reimbursements to providers working?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I think we can look to the history of Medicare to understand exactly some of the dynamics at play here. So for many years, physician reimbursements via Medicare essentially were allowed to increase upwards to reflect medical inflation and to reflect increasing healthcare spending cost growth. And then in the early 2000s, Congress passed a law that essentially would have required those increases to stop, and in some cases, those rates of reimbursement to be cut year over year, depending on other factors. And every single year, providers, physicians, and others would lobby Congress to ensure that those cuts didn't happen. And every year, Congress would respond by passing some piece of legislation. It became known as the Doc Fix. They would pass this legislation before the end of every year to offset or to ensure these cuts didn't happen. And so, you know, we don't have to look very far to see that the history of this, anytime you have a public program that is reimbursing physicians, there is going to be pressure on the Congress, political pressure, to stop those cuts. And in some ways, rightfully so, we want to ensure that providers are properly compensated for the services they're providing. So I think it's somewhat naive for us to believe that creating a public option would not instill similar pressure on the Congress to ensure that reimbursement rates remain high. We have in healthcare markets something known as price discrimination, where the same service, as Kavita alluded to, the same service is reimbursed at higher levels in private insurance than it is in Medicare and Medicaid. And over time, the more people that adopt a public option, the more pressure there will be to raise reimbursement rates through the public option to rates that look more like private insurance rather than they do currently under Medicare. So the historical evidence on this is quite clear, and I think that suggests there will be upward pressure on reimbursement levels in a public option, particularly if it's successful.
Dr. Kavita Patel, I want to talk about what the effect would be on private insurers or the plans that people get through their employer if they're not getting health care through the state exchanges. If you've got a public option, does that potentially make it more difficult for the private insurers to be able to compete with a subsidized public option?
Not necessarily, Larry. And again, this is kind of building off of when there were much more robust talks about adding a public option into the Affordable Care Act. The Congressional Budget Office, which is nonpartisan and kind of helps advise Congress on the implications of current law or potential law, the Congressional Budget Office did state that there might be some pressure if there were a public option which were priced in such a way that people would leave employer-based insurance or private insurance and enter into a public option. So I think there is always a possibility that if it is, Larry, like Medicare, like the Medicare program, I think that's also been something that my former boss, Ted Kennedy, Senator Kennedy, proposed, a Medicare buy-in option for adults. That would be pegged at a lower cost because Medicare is able to negotiate prices and be able to decrease and keep its administrative costs low. That would put pressure on private insurers. But I would also just offer to you that that might be the kind of pressure we need because as Lonnie mentioned, that, you know, private insurance companies have had to kind of compensate for this distortion in the market by paying more to hospitals and to physicians. But wouldn't it be nice if we could actually offer patients a lower cost alternative and also create some sort of dynamic so that hospitals would have to compete in order to get kind of insurance companies to put them in their preferential networks. Right now, you and I can't just go to any old hospital. We try to go to an in-network provider, an in-network hospital, and that has been a mechanism for the insurance industry to work with providers to try to keep prices low. You get insurance, and they will offer you a first choice of where you should go to receive care. So there is actually a way. It's not just one versus the other. There's a way for this to work together to bring overall prices down. But it's a zero-sum game, Larry. It means that somebody, not everybody in healthcare wins in that scenario. And who ends up losing might be health systems that have to think about whether or not they need to cut costs in certain areas. Might be insurance companies, which candidly in 2020, during a pandemic, have had record-breaking quarterly profits. So somebody will have to give some of that, and it's just a question of who, and it shouldn't be American taxpayers.
I'm assuming that the reason for the pandemic is so few people are going to doctors or for emergency care unless they absolutely have to. Is that driving that?
Yes, that's
just
that's
low usage.
And the number of elective procedures and some overall visits have been decreased. And so, yes, this is resulting in kind of record quarters. Not sustainable, but still, people are making money in healthcare, and we should all scrutinize, you know, where that's coming from.
Want to thank you both very much for being with us. Frequent guests on Air Talk discussing health policy and health economics. That's Dr. Kavita Patel, primary care physician and non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, and Lonnie Chen, research fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford. Co-authored the recent Wall Street Journal op-ed, Biden's public option would mean massive tax hikes. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC. Coming up, I want to hear from you what you're going to be doing for Halloween. Are you going to be staying home? Do you have any sort of distance celebration that you're planning? If you're going to give out candy, do you have any creative way of doing that safely? 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. We'll be back very soon.